bit of value in Hidden Dimples being so big in this market. Runners are loading up. Ed Walker won last year's race, got Random Harvest in the Lady.
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
We would like to thank Woodbine for their sponsorship of this program and some of the other programming and events here at Capital OTB. Woodbine's 2023 Thoroughbred Stakes program has more than $17 million in purses, including 39 graded stakes, 5 grade 1 events, and 2 $1 million classics, the King's Plate and the Woodbine Mile. Woodbine, now through December, great racing north of the border. Good morning. Welcome to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning, the day after. A little bit of an upset with Mage getting it done at 15-1 in yesterday's Derby. We will have plenty of conversation about that, the Oaks, some of the undercard stakes as well coming up. It was a fun day. Hopefully you cashed some tickets. But as usual, on the day after, many big events, but certainly the Kentucky Derby, reached out to our friend Steve Bick, our friend and colleague who has been down at Churchill Downs for a couple of weeks, obviously once again doing yeoman's work, giving out great information in the lead up to Oaks Derby weekend. Steve, good morning.
Seth, good morning. Good morning, everybody.
And before we get into anything else, I had to toss out and get how it all went, because yesterday, not only had you had that the couple of weeks leading up to the Derby, but yesterday, Derby Day coverage as well as part of the NBC Sports Audio package. How'd the radio programming go yesterday?
Well, you mean you weren't listening?
I was working. I worked all day.
I know you were. It went very well. We had a lot of fun. It was a new experience, actually, for me, because I had to tape some of the conversations with the NBC talent, including Nick Luck and Brittany Urton, Donna Brothers and Kenny Rice and Randy Moss, and also Billy Rappaport, the field producer, and then had some live visits from the DRF team and Marty McGee on his last day as a turf writer, as well as Mike Welch and Dave Grenig. Frank Angst, in addition, from Bloodhorse. It was really fun. I was delighted to be asked by the network and NBC to do it, and I'd be happy to make it a staple of the Derby coverage here these 2 weeks.
I'm sure they'd be happy with you, and the audience would too. I was happy to hear that you had the gig, and so I'm glad to hear it all went well and worked out nicely. And let's get into it now, but before we get into the Derby itself, just talk a little bit about the lead-up. I mean, you've been down there, as I say, for better than a week and a couple of weeks for the most part, and talk a little bit about particularly this last week and this last few days. There's been nothing like that for me in recent memory, and memory at all, really. But talk a little bit about the buzz over the last couple of days with the number of scratches and whatnot.
Well, obviously, that's the biggest part of the story, other than, the winners and some of the, the terrific results. The controversy and the elements of, let's call it veterinary supervision, regulatory veterinary supervision, and the atmosphere under which the game is operating currently is going to be now a regular part of these big weekends and Triple Crown, Breeders' Cup, et cetera. Then you fold in the lead up to the weekend, the on-track deaths, the paddock deaths. This has been a very strange, let's call it 9 days. I don't know why we're leading with this exactly, but the variety of injuries and fatalities are so diverse and frankly bizarre and completely unrelatable, essentially. It's one thing when there's a place on the racetrack that is problematic, and it might be, you know, traditionally here, the first turn, it has been a little bit lower. It's a bit of a sink, not a sinkhole, but there's a low-lying area under the clubhouse that has always been a washout area when there's heavy storms. It's one thing when there's injuries in one part of a track. What's happened here this week at the turf course, a couple of different places, the main track, three different spots on the track, different kinds of injuries. You had a horse flip in the paddock and fracture her skull. You had a horse flip over in a stall in the paddock and hurt an ankle. You can't tie these things together. It's a spate of bad luck, and that, you know, that can happen. This is not like the Santa Anita scenario from 3 years ago, or the Aqueduct scenario from 2010, where there's a concentration of relatable fatalities. This is dumb luck. Then you fold in the two cardiac incidents involving the Sappy Joseph horses, and you got yourself a very awkward and intimidating storyline. And it's very problematic that that's been sharing, you know, essentially sharing headlines with the on-track performances. But that's the era we're dealing with, and the newspapers that are desperate for attention, they're going to concentrate on the sensational. So we have to have answers. I did quite a bit of media this week on Sirius XM, on other Sirius XM sports channels, and I was confronted, you know, regularly with these questions, and you have to just explain that over the course of the last 10 years, the industry has cut fatalities in half. In half. There's never been fewer injuries per start and fatalities per start than they are right now. We are now on a par with Europe in terms of fatalities per start. So anybody that wants to push this agenda, shove it in their face, that the industry has responded absolutely brilliantly, frankly, in uniformity and the evaluation of horses and minimizing horses put at risk. And that's the only answer we can provide. The fact is, the people that are pushing this agenda, they're going to argue, and they're going to attack the industry no matter how few fatalities there are. So you just better face this assault and have good answers, uniform answers.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to touch on it, because I knew the buzz down there would be in that direction, and because I know I have had to answer questions over the past few days as well, as people that maybe aren't into the game have asked me, hey, who do you like in the Derby? And then they'll bring up the news stories, and I have mentioned these situations were all so diverse, it's really not something you can point to, but the media coverage, the mainstream media coverage, and hitting folks who don't follow horse racing, they don't understand. It all gets lumped together. And I kind of had a feeling that down there, and your take would be to parse it out a little bit differently and maybe give the folks who are watching answers as well when they have folks who maybe don't normally watch horse racing but have followed Derby, ask them questions. So just appreciated the thoughts there. Now let's get into the racing and whatnot. First of all, yesterday, just give us a little overview. Watching on TV, it looked like a great day. The crowd was up a little bit. The betting handle was great. And weather-wise, it turned out to be a great couple of days.
It did. And any concern about rain was essentially allayed. And we ended up with Friday... you know, a lot of times forecasters will be wrong and storms will come rolling in. In this case, they were wrong because a summer day came rolling in. It was 80-something degrees. People were, people were dripping from head to toe by Oaks time. It was very strange. And then yesterday we were overcast for the most part. We knew that there was rain coming, and it held off until 8 o'clock, until the 13th race. The perfect day. The Churchill Downs is in the process of being remodeled, and basically everything is pointing to this Derby 150 next year. People that have never been, they won't know the difference. But those that have been coming to the Downs for any period of time, you're going to really be encounter an unbelievable facility. What they've done here is remarkable. The betting handle would have been even better had we not had, and you and I didn't really talk about the specifics of the scratches, including Forte, but the field of 18 brings the betting numbers down. So even with the record, the numbers would have been even better had you had a full field of 20. And of course, when it came to Forte, he hadn't looked right, actually, even before the stone bruise, if that's what it was. And I think it probably was, a bruise hoof. We'll see if they come back for Preakness. but Practical Move, he was a horse that wasn't going right either. There were a couple of mornings where he barely worked, so that wasn't a surprise. Continue R was a mess. He looked terrible the whole 2 weeks we were here. Those scratches, they weren't a surprise. Then when the thing with Safi Joseph came up, you knew that Lord Miles wasn't going to make the race. So you have to be on your toes. And the last couple of years, obviously, between Rich Strike and what happened, these last 48 hours, we are going to have to deal with this, I think, going forward from now on. But overall, things were terrific. I mean, I was on the air 2 to 5, so I really didn't. I really wasn't in touch with the moment to moment action. I usually do from the paddock to the track apron to the winner's circle. We should talk a little bit about what happened in the American Turf at some point, because Talk of the Nation was scratched by the vets. This has not even been really noticed without explanation. They didn't give Reeve McGahey any explanation. Tyler Gaffleone felt the horse was fine. He warmed up fine. It's not like he went to the gate and said, I don't like the way the horse is warming up. The vets just said, we don't like the way he looks. They're very fortunate that Shug McGahey was in New York and not here, because Shug would have absolutely... I can't imagine what it would have been like had Shug been on the ground.
Yeah, and you've talked about this situation now for the last couple of months as you've bounced around to different venues, but I think you're absolutely right. It's going to become more of a thing on these big days. We'll see how it shakes out. But let's get into it. Derby yesterday, we'll watch the entire race. I know you like Two Phils. I liked Angel of Empire. I thought they both ran well. I just couldn't pull the trigger on Mage with only the 3 starts, but he joins Big Brown and Justify as equally light raced horses who had won the Derby. We're watching him come out of the gate here and come down the stretch the first time. And I was a little bit disappointed. I was so far back with Angel of Empire, but then when I went back and watched the replay, Mage was right back there as well. Mage, as they get to the far turn, just gets the jump on Angel of Empire and makes the big move. But I will say again, you like Two Phils. Two Phils ran big because he was right up there sitting off that early pace and continued on nicely. So I thought it was a nice performance from all three of the all of the top 3 runners. Disarm, who I like, runs 4th in here. Certainly, there were some horses who I think people were on board that ran a little bit of disappointing, but that's the Kentucky Derby. But give me your thoughts. Oh, I should note, Dave Grenick tweeted out a little while ago, a 105 buyer for Mage. Your thoughts on the Derby?
Well, there were 2 horses that ran, and nothing else matters. The winner and Two Phils are the only horses in here that mean anything. The rest of it is all a bunch of window dressing. Mage, it really is a performance that probably equates with maybe Monarcos to some degree. Almost like Street Sense. I'm still digesting this portion of it. The fact is that two Phils ran the best race in this Derby. The horses that were first, second, third, fourth, and fifth through the pace that, you know, we discussed the pace extensively for weeks, and when Cyclone Mischief was added, it became obvious that this was going to be easily a fast pace, and it ended up being even faster than we were telling people. For Mage, I mean, for two Phils to get beat a length when the other horses in that pack of five that were attending the pace, 22-1, 45-3, 110, the horses that were around two Phils finished 16th, 14th, 13th, and 10th. Beaten, I don't know, a dozen lengths, 15 lengths. Two Phils ran a race like Bodemeister and like Congaree. It's one of the best performances in defeat you're ever going to see in this race. And Jareth Loveberry's move on the turn to knife through a tiring verifying and make the lead in about two jumps. We've talked for weeks that this was a horse that had an explosive turn of foot. He was able to attend the pace, and then when asked, he absolutely shot to the lead. Watch the replay. His ears go up when he hits the front, and it took a brilliant Javier Castellano ride, essentially, to beat two Phils. But these two horses, and yes, Angel of Empire closed nicely, you know, to be third. He wasn't getting past two Phils who hung in and may have actually even been on a little bit of a more tiring portion of the track late. But it's Mage and two Phils, and nothing else particularly matters. Javier Castellano gets his elusive Derby 0-for-15 coming in with only the placement on Audible to his credit. It has been an absolutely dismal scenario for Javi. He rode Bellamy Road, was his first Derby mount, and that was the favorite. And since then, other than Audible, and I think he had a fourth on Normandy Invasion, other than that, he's been up the track year after year after year, which was bizarre, of course. I mean, he's won everything else. He's got, what, six Travers wins? And it really, to me, the best part of this whole story is Javier Castellano getting that Derby that had been eluding him, a Hall of Famer. Jareth Loveberry, a Michigan export, a guy that literally came off of the Busch tracks in Michigan, you know, that Great Meadows Downs or whatever it was, at Hazel Park and Pinnacle, and, you know, years of Canterbury. This is a guy that has been slowly, slowly edging into the upper level of journeyman. Larry Ravelli and Gustavo Delgado. How about, you know, all the concentration on Todd Pletcher and Brad Cox and, oh, and the Dominant Barnes. The Dominant Barnes, they're licking their wounds this morning. And also, by the way, how about the Japanese? Oh, the international. Oh, they're so fabulous. Except that this is Venezuela that just won this race, not Japan. Japan was another, you know, another non-entity in this race from both of those horses. I mean, the stories in here are absolutely two medium-sized outfits in Gustavo Delgado and Larry Ravelli. Ravelli and two Phils is amazing, because this is a horse that you don't know, and I would doubt that he even gets here had Arlington not closed. And you're going to say, what is Arlington? Well, Ravelli would have been running this horse at Arlington, but he had started to transition his barn away from his hometown and his home track, with Arlington slated to close and with everything dwindling in Chicago. This horse would have been running on grass and synthetic, might never have gotten the chance to run on the dirt. You know, of course, broke the maiden at Colonial, wins the Street Sense here, which is ironic, of course, because Street Sense beat his sire, Hard Spun. there's so much about this that is fascinating. There's the, you know, there's just every part of both of these horses that is really kind of heartwarming. And on to Baltimore with this pair. I don't know, you know, really who else is we're going to worry about right away. I think they'll be a good smattering. And of course, First Mission is going to be waiting. Brad Cox has got a fresh First Mission in Baltimore, trying to pull, you know, kind of a Bernardini stunt. But, you know, to me, Two Phils ran the kind of race that rarely loses for a runner-up in Baltimore. He should be very imposing at Pimlico.
Jeff Ruby Stakes becoming a major prep for the Derby, it seems like, over the past couple of years. And, yeah, you mentioned Ravelli based up in Chicago, and that last work Two Phils had at Hawthorne got a lot of buzz, certainly. You don't see that often either, horse working up at Hawthorne and coming down. And I agree, Two Phils ran very well, having attended the pace like that. Mage, very good. I'm giving more credit to Angel of Empire, and I may be biased, I use the horse. But if you watch on the turn, Mage and Angel of Empire are right next to each other, and I think Javi just makes the better move, whereas Flavian is kind of behind horses, and it took him a few strides to decide, and then he kind of got out and followed Mage, and at that point it was done. But I thought he ran well.
There are two horses that ran exceptional races. I mean, obviously the winner did, but Two Phils and Hitcho. We should talk about Hitcho finishing fifth, because he was sitting about sixth. He was sort of at the front end of the mid-pack stalkers. But recognize that the horses, the winner was 16th after a half mile. Angel of Empire was 15th. Disarm was 12th. And Dermisotagaki was 13th. So and even Tappet Trice was 18th. So among the top seven finishers, you had horses that were 13th, 12th, 13th, 15th, 16th, and 18th. The pace collapsed. The horses that ended up, these five horses of the top seven, they all closed into a collapsing pace. When that happens, the horses that attended the pace, they're the ones who ran the best races. And that's Two Phils, and Hitcho gets a B+. Everybody else is clunking up, except for Mage. And I ran second, third, and fourth in here, and got beat for truckloads. This is a fascinating pace dynamic example. And when you see horses, in the teens that are at the top of the chart, and horses that were, you know, first, second, third at the bottom of the chart, that's a pace collapse. That's what happened here, period. And horses that ran on and near the lead get the most credit in that scenario. It's Two Phils ran the best race here.
I have no arguments. He ran very, very well. All right, let's go back to Friday, because I'll tip my cap to you there. You went with the winner. We'll look at the Oaks, and you like Pretty Mischievous, who ran very well. We're going to take a look at, again, the entire Oaks here. Pretty Mischievous is going to be the number 14. Gambling Girl, the number 3, runs second. The Alice Look, number 2, runs third. But a 10-1, a nice $22 and change winner for you in the Oaks. And then I also noted you had the full card picked on your website. You had the $20 winner in the Nightcap as well. So tossed out a couple of $20 winners to end the day on Friday. 92 buyer, from what I read, for a Pretty Mischievous. Your thoughts in Friday's Oaks?
Well, we had talked, obviously, for weeks and months that this was a very modest group of fillies coming into the Oaks. Pretty Mischievous, as I discussed with, you know, really all week, she had looked the best of this group. Coming in every single morning, she just looked spectacular. And you knew that the favorite, Wet Paint, was going to have to pass, you know, maybe all of them. It turns out that she almost did. She was 13th off the break. So she was going to have to pass 12 horses, essentially, to win this race. She did it at Oaklawn twice. Was it likely that she could do it On this stage, it was less likely. So I thought that, you know, you had to respect her because she had been very effective, but I think you wanted to find alternatives. Pretty mischievous. I think if she had drawn, let's say, the 6, 7, 8 hole, I don't think she would have gone off at that price. It was bizarre that she did not take more money. 10-1 morning line goes off at 10-1 and change. And 2274 was a fabulous value on the winner. And I didn't let the 14 hole bother me at all. She just, to me, was the pick all along. Those of you that are figure players and speed figure players, you knew that, you know, that she was one of the ones that you needed to have at the top of your ticket. After that, I don't know. You know, Gambling Girl, I thought that she would outrun her odds. I kind of kicked myself in my final analysis, leading her off. Nick Tamaro and I discussed it, and I said, you know, Gambling Girl, she's doing well, and when are you going to get Todd Fletcher and Errat Ortiz, you know, at the kind of price you're going to get here? And sure enough, you know, she was coming. She was coming with a relentless charge. But if you watch the replay, watch Pretty Mischievous and Tyler Gaffalione at the top of the stretch. Gaffalione is motionless, absolutely motionless. Everybody else is asking their filly, and he's just waiting. When she struck the front, he spurts away a little bit, built up a, I don't know, 3-4 length lead, and, you know, then gave her a little bit of a cruise rest through the stretch. And Gambling Girl was, you know, was getting to her, but Pretty Mischievous held her safe. The Alice Look, you know, that I didn't even notice that she was going off at 30-1. Certainly felt like that, you know, that Brad Cox runner was going to be the better value with Wet Paint. Botanical, you know, I know people were comparing Botanical to Phil's just because they both came through Turfway Park, but Botanical had never run on the dirt, and she was far less likely or far less more uncertain to take to the main track, even though her pedigree was okay for dirt. But she was dismal. She didn't lift a hoof. And, you know, South Lawn disappointed a little bit, never really got going. Wonder Wheel, you know, very strange scenario for the 2-year-old filly champion. She again got beat on the big grade one stage. The last try in the Ashland, she got beat. And both times her connections, the Green family, Len Green, Lois, and son John, they were at Keeneland and they were here on the Fridays. And then they flew home and they missed their stake wins the next day because, of course, Web Slinger won the American Turf. But they went home. They didn't see it. And they also won a stake at Keeneland the day after Wonder Wheel didn't run. So anyway, this was a nice race, and 2274 was a very nice return on the winner.
Yeah, very nice. And again, hats off to you for tilting in that direction. All right, let's go back to Saturday yesterday and look at some of the stakes action. They got a win, but I read, I believe it was Mike Welch in the Racing Forum, was talking to Todd later in the day, and he said, yeah, it didn't make up for the scratch of Forte. But the team does get a win, Pletcher and Rapoli and Company in the Turf Classic. We're going to watch the stretch run. It'll be number 5 up to the mark, getting it done as the 5-2 choice. Hong Kong Harry second. I took a little shot with the elder statesman in here, the 8-year-old Spooky Channel, and that one runs third, but an unthreatening third in here as up to the mark gets it done pretty easily under Errat Ortiz. Your thoughts on the Turf Classic?
I you know, I thought that this was a subpar edition of this race. I mean, this is a race that, you know, it really should be a, you know, an early season indicator towards the Breeders' Cup Turf, although it's a mile and an eighth. They bet this horse like the race had already been run. I mean, I understand that from the morning line, but at the same time, I didn't think this horse was a 5-2 shot, and he buried this field. So he's obviously a 4-year-old on the upswing, and like you say, it's a nice consolation prize after, you know, running second and barely losing in the Oaks. The carrying on over Forte is a little odd, because it was clear by Thursday that the horse was going to be at the mercy of the vets. It's not like people woke up on Derby morning and it was like, oh my God, something's wrong with Forte. There was a 48-hour lead up saying that Forte is getting more and more doubtful. So I really don't understand that, you know, that portion of this dialogue.
Well, Derby favorite scratched on Derby morning. That's just by the nature of it gonna be big news and kind of eye opening.
Yeah,
and then
you put
the exclamation point that there were the three four other the other scratches, and it's just it made for a wacky couple of days, certainly. One of the stories in the lead up, and has been now for a while, the Churchill Down 7-furlong sprint, and it was Cody's Wish, who obviously continues to be a story beyond the horse himself. But this was a nice performance. Cody's Wish, the number 7 horse here, the chart margin just under 5 lengths. He goes off as the favorite, paying $3.44. Hoist the Flag second. Tejano Twist, who I thought was a little bit interesting, winds up third in here. But Bill Mott in the post-race article in the Racing Forum just talked about how what the story is more than the racetrack and how important this horse is to him and the fans and whatnot, and obviously the family of Cody Dorman. But Cody's Wish gets it done in the Churchill Downs. Your thoughts?
Well, yeah, exactly. It's a proverbial feel-good story, and more than a feel-good story, this is a really, really nice horse, period. I mean, what else is there to say? He's a serious horse.
And it seems like they may be heading to the Met Mile, which adds some excitement to that. And Smile Happy, who won with the triple digit on Friday, may add some excitement. So looks like adds a storyline maybe upcoming in New York in a few weeks as well.
Well, Smile Happy, yes, I don't know if you noticed, Smile Happy got a 110 buyer.
Yeah.
And that was a mammoth effort. So I assume the Met Mile, although, you know, with Kenny McPeak, he might want to bring him to Ascot, the way Kenny operates.
We kind of alluded to it earlier, the American Turf upset there. Mark Cassie gets it done. Number 14, Web Slinger, gets up by a nose at 22-1. Farbridge runs second. Major Dude runs third. Mostache fourth. But as I say, it's Mark Cassie and Javier Castellano getting it done in a nail biter by a nose at 22-1. Your thoughts in the American Turf?
Well, this was interesting because Web Slinger was a very playable price in here. In fact, we said on the telecast, on the radio telecast, I've already put myself on the NBC television team. I've said on the radio as we were leading up, going through the prices. And, of course, this was before the scratch of Talk of the Nation. And I said, if you're looking for a price, Web Slinger, if he could work out a trip, he had a terrible time of it. If you had gone back to the previous start when he got beat in the Transylvania, this was, I'm not a huge trip type of a player, but he had a real trip in that Transylvania and got beat 2 lengths. So Javi works out the really 2 brilliant rides on the day on the 3-year-olds, and happy for the Greens to win this race, DJ Stables. Exciting. I obviously would have preferred to have Talk of the Nation at least be in this race. Shug, we'll see. I mean, where Shug ends up with him now, and I'll work on that. We'll hear from Shug tomorrow about the Pat Day Mile winner, so we'll find out. But Web Slinger and Far Bridge, who was a horse that a lot of people were playing. Major Dude, third in here with the inside trip under Arad Ortiz. This inside trip went okay. His inside trip on Goodnight Olive was a nightmare, and he got schooled. I mean, like beaten by a nun at parochial school. That was quite something, actually, to behold.
Yeah,
major dude could have run in the Derby, but I think they'll probably, long-term, I think they'll be happy that that they ended up in this race. You know who ran very well in here was Mostache, the horse of Vicky Oliver's. The disappointment, of course, was Carl Spackler, who he stopped as if he either bled or entrapped. Something went awry because he came ranging up to Mostache and then, you know, faded just as quickly as he had ranged up. So we'll have to get a report on Carl Spackler, but it feels like something went awry.
Pat DeMaio, you alluded to it. One of the horses I really liked on the day was General Jim, and I thought he had the chance to run well here and kind of establish himself as an interesting three-year-old now to really look forward to in the you know, summertime second half of the year. Hadn't been seen since the win in the Swale, but General Jim, the number nine horse here, 5-1 gets it done over number seven, Fort Bragg. Gilmore runs third. Kangaroo Court went off as the 4-1 favorite, finished 11th in the field of 13. But again, a neck victory, nice gutsy victory for General Jim. Louis Saez, and as you say, Shug training, but going to be interested to see where they go with him next. So I'll be tuning in and seeing what Shug says, because I'm interested to see what the future holds for General Jim. But your thoughts in the Pat DeMaio?
You know, this felt like a chaos race, potentially. And it was bet like a chaos race. It was shocking the Kangaroo Court was bet that way. At 8-1, yeah. I thought, especially the way the track had been playing a little bit to speed, the track was very curious, really, both days. There were times when it played like an outside flow, and there were some occasions where it looked like, you know, inside speed, at least let's say front end speed was good. It's uncertain if the inside path, meaning the rail, was some people were thinking maybe the rail was a little dead. I'm going to have to hear from some more jockeys about this. But the way the race was bet, when you see four horses within a dollar of each other, essentially. General Jim went off at $5.02. Fort Bragg went off at 11-2, 5.52. Echo again went off at 5.25, and Kangaroo Court at 4.25. When you see prices like that, it means the public is confused. And at the same time, it didn't necessarily feel like a race where you were going to go reaching for a crazy price. You sort of either spread around a little bit. I thought Curly Jack on the way he likes this track on the turn back might be a little usable. I thought the Kangaroo Court was okay, and General Jim, you know, was the other obvious player from Shug. And credit to Shug, after General Jim got sick after the Swale, you know, essentially he said, we're going to wait on stretching this horse out. We'll stay at one turn. So now they can even look at maybe the Woody Stevens,
yeah,
and go after the grade one after winning this grade two. Always happy when Don Adam, Cortland Farm, when Don Adam wins, it's good for the ownership ranks. He puts a lot of money in, and, you know, he moved horses to Shug over these last, I don't know, 3 years maybe. So very happy for those bright turquoise silks of Don Adam to get a nice win like this. Fort Bragg ran well, at least Tim Yakteen. He had a mixed bag. Obviously, losing Practical Move is a heartache. But at the same time, Fort Bragg second in here. Johannes ran okay in the American Turf. Reincarnate kind of ranged up. I don't even know where Reincarnate finished, actually, in the Derby. What was he, like 10th, 11th, 12th?
Good question. Reincarnate was...
He was 13th. 13th.
Yeah, 13. Yep, you got it. Speaking of trainers, let's go back and look at the Turf Sprint, because we talked about already two fills in Larry Valley, but he wins earlier with Nobles in the Turf Sprint, taking him all the way around. as the rank outsider at 38-1. Will not be caught in the stretch. Gerardo Corrales on board. Motoria second. Go Bears go third. Arrest Me Red, the 5-2 favorite, wound up fifth in here. But again, taking them all the way around and paying $78.42. Nobles, your thoughts in the turf sprint with the Ravelli runner?
Well, it was, you know, it's funny because it's not just Ravelli, it's also Vince Foglia, who's the majority partner on Two Fills. And so, you know, I got very friendly with the breeder and the minority partner who sold and brought Vince Foglia in, Anthony Sagan and his dad Phil and the other Phil. Those are the two Phils. In fact, we had a late night, bittersweet celebratory dinner last night at Malone's with the Sagan family, which was really kind of fun. And at the same time, you know, they're showing the replay on the televisions in Harry's Bar there, and you know, every time they show it, you're shaking your head. Okay, you won $600,000, you finished second in the Derby, you only have two horses, the Dam of this horse and two Phils, but Vince Foglia, you know, the Patricia's Hope name that you see very frequently with Wesley Ward and with Ravelli. When this horse won, and I give Ravelli a ton of credit, he basically said pre-race to Corrales, if it doesn't look like anybody's breaking, you take the lead and go on, because you know that inside path on the turf, you know, they took the rails down on Friday. So that's all virgin grass in there.
Yeah.
And the footing is always terrific down by the turf rail. And that's what happened here. And nobody else got out of the gate with any alacrity. And the next thing you know, old Jed's a thousandaire. This was a great win, you know, for Ravelli. And then later, when before the Derby, I got to spend some time as he was saddling two Phils, and I said, how often can you be a two-time winner on Derby Day? it's so funny when this happens. Any owners out there that have had horses, multiple horses run, you know, particularly on a big day, but it doesn't have to be on a big day. You win a race early on a card, and it's a horse that you were looking forward to running, but it's the other horse on the card that you really want to win. You know, if you had to trade, if you had to say, you know, if you could only win one race today, which would it be? Well, it would be the Kentucky Derby. So when they won with no balls, I was just getting ready for the radio show to start. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't know, this is bad. They're winning now. I bet you they're not going to win the feature, but they came close.
Yeah, very close. We're kind of getting close to wrapping it up here, so I'll just skip back and watch, because you mentioned it a few minutes ago, and it's worth taking another look at the Derby City Distaff, and we will see Goodnight Olive goes off. 57 cents to the dollar. Goodnight Olive is going to be the number two horse, but Matarea gets it done, number five, and Wicked Halo runs second, with Goodnight Olive just trapped there and cannot find anywhere to run. So again, it was certainly a nice set of rides by the winner and the runner-up to not give the big favorite anywhere to go. And we're watching the stretch run here. She has nowhere to go. And so Matarea winds up being the victor. Your thoughts in that race with the upset of Goodnight Olive?
Well, it's like I told you, Errat Ortiz absolutely had his head handed to him.
Yeah.
And had to be completely humiliated. A six-horse field, and you get yourself pocketed by Flavian Pratt and by Tyler Gaffalione and by Gerardo Corrales. I mean, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You're on a 1-2 favorite. You have to find a path for yourself immediately. And for him to, I mean, he didn't even try to force his way out. I mean, he was absolutely schooled. And good, you know what? Good. Because with the antics that he pulls on the racetrack on a daily basis, it was good for him to get humiliated on national television.
And that was kind of the buzz out on Twitter as well. Like I say, we'll let you go, but any other thoughts on the couple of days? I'll just talk some of the races. The La Troyenne, nice. Boy, just a good finish there. Played hard, gets it done for Phil Bauer, Rigney Racing. And Johnny V on board. Secret Oath and Search Results ran well. Secret Oath, I thought, ran nicely there. Caravelle continues to impress, and I understand they're headed over to Royal Ascot with that one. And Red Carpet Ready gets it done over the short price favorite Money's Gold in the Eight Bells. Your thoughts on any other Friday, Saturday action?
Well, on the Friday card, we already talked about Smile Happy's unbelievable effort.
Yeah.
You know, that Vidia for Nacho Correa, it looks like she's the good 5-year-old mare by Orpin for the Maribel stable that that Nacho trains for. That's going to be a very important mare for the rest of the year. How about George Rusty Arnold II, Red Carpet Ready on the turn back? Rusty is a crafty old fox. Caravelle, you know, she should have been 1-9. The best story on Friday, I mean, obviously the Oaks winner, but played hard.
Yeah.
What a tremendous win for the Bowers. Phil Bauer, and you heard Phil on the post race, this is a really good story. And a guy, he and his wife, that put everything they have into it. Mr. Rigney gave them a huge opportunity, you know, to essentially, you know, train as a private trainer. Rigney has been very patient. And he's being rewarded. This is huge. I can't wait to talk to Phil Bauer. So big for him, the same way for, you know, Ravelli and for Gustavo Delgado. You know, the trainer stories on that front were very good. And, of course, Heavenly Sunday, Bill Harrigan, the veteran horseman breeder, preparer of young horses, Harrigan with Heavenly Sunday, and Harrigan had a hell of a weekend. You know, he had the horse that ran second too. I forget, there was another Harrigan horse that ran super on the weekend. I'm drawing a blank on who it was.
Yeah, it
doesn't... So they had a Maribel had a nice weekend.
And again, played hard. Johnny Velasquez on board. That was a nice part of the weekend as well. Fun. It was a fun couple of days. The lead up was promising that, and then it got a little kind of crazy as compared to previous Oaks Derby weekends. But played out on track with some great racing and some opportunities to make some money. And as always, Steve, again, did a great job in the lead up and. Happy to hear things went well with the NBC Sports audio broadcast yesterday. You and I were talking before we went on the air. You're going to be doing recaps, obviously, from Churchill the next few days, and then headed down to the Iroquois at Nashville at the end of the week.
Very excited to attend my first Iroquois at Percy Warner Park in Nashville. Tina, here's how big it is. Derby Barbie is now Iroquois Barbie. She passed on Derby in favor of a Nashville trip. So she's going to meet me Friday night in Nashville, and we're really looking forward to it. It's supposed to be spectacular. Some people say they prefer it even to Far Hills, to the Grand National experience, which is really saying something. So we can't wait to do that. But 3 days of recapping from here at Churchill Downs, and on the, as they do around here, 364 days till Derby 150.
Very good. As they say, great work down there. Say hello to everybody for me, Joe Kay and the whole gang, Darren Rogers and whatnot, while you're there. And then at the end of the week, say hello to one or both of the Clancy brothers, I would assume, will be in attendance.
Yes, they will.
You would have to think. Steve, appreciate it. Again, have a great week, and we will talk again soon.
Seth, thank you. Hope everybody enjoyed Derby. Hope everybody got a little something somewhere along the way. And just remember, the money you win this afternoon at Belmont, it'll spend the exact same as the money that you didn't win Friday and Saturday.
Very good. I That is great horse racing advice. Steve, again, thanks a lot. Take it easy.
Take care.
Steve Bick, SiriusXM's At the Races. Of course, Summertime sits in with me as well on Sunday mornings here on the network. And yesterday, doing a little NBC Sports audio coverage. So he's all over the place all year long, bouncing around. And great follow-up. Again, that tout to tune in beginning of the week as he'll be talking to all these connections and getting follow-ups on winners and also Rans and what's up for them and how the weekend went for people. So make sure you tune in. Before we go to a commercial break, I am going to give you our dark horse play of the day. Again, the Dark Horse Mercantile and their sister store Impressions on board throughout the Triple Crown season. We had the Dark Horse play of the day last summer up at Saratoga every morning. I'll be doing plays of the day on the weekends during this Triple Crown season. And the Dark Horse play of the day, I'm going to go out to race number 4 at Belmont. This afternoon, it is a maiden special at a mile and an eighth. Dark horse play of the day, Rockstar Red, going out for Bill Mott. Third start of the career. First couple of starts were down at Gulfstream. And the horse ran okay, kind of middling, but just seems to be one of those that has the potential, I think, to maybe improve with experience. And the first couple of races are maybe a little bit below a couple of the better horses in here. The 1 and the 3 on the numbers are a little bit better. But I could see a move forward here in the third career start with the experience under the belt for Rockstar Red from Bill Mott, Junior Alvarado on board. They were the Cody's Wish team yesterday. So we'll see if they can get it done. 12-1 on the morning line. So today's dark horse play of the day. Race 4, number 10, Rockstar Red. And again, Dark Horse Mercantile, I highly touted. I said yesterday, we're getting to that time of the year where the weather's getting nice, and downtown Saratoga is a very walkable downtown. So if you're heading up to Saratoga for some lunch or some dinner, just walk around downtown and make a stop at the Dark Horse Mercantile. Go down the street to their sister store, Impressions of Saratoga. Great Saratoga merchandise, racing-related merchandise, apparel and whatnot. I guarantee you will enjoy your visits to both Dark Horse Mercantile and Impressions of Saratoga. All right, we'll head to a break. When we come back, our Sunday segment with Tony Kahlo. We'll take a look at some of the Finger Lakes action for tomorrow, so stay tuned. It only takes one upset to make history, and now you can be part of Saratoga's long tradition at the Dark Horse Mercantile. The Dark Horse Mercantile offers a carefully curated selection of clothing, gifts, and home decor, from one-of-a-kind vintage racing memorabilia to select brands like Barber and Under Armour, as well as exclusive Dark Horse branded merchandise. So celebrate the Dark Horse in all of us at the Dark Horse Mercantile, downtown Saratoga, where the smart bet is always the Dark Horse. Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now. Welcome back to Racing Across America on a Sunday morning. And a Sunday morning means a visit from Tony Kahlo at the Finger Lakes. A little preview of some of the early week action up in the Rochester area. Tony, good morning.
Hey, Seth. How are you, buddy?
Very good. And obviously, I have to ask, because we have spent the first portion of the program talking about the action yesterday at Churchill. And so going back to Friday and Saturday, pretty mischievous in the Oaks, and yesterday, Mage in the Derby. What were your thoughts on some of the stakes action at Churchill Friday and Saturday?
Some great racing. Great Kentucky Oaks, pretty mischievous. Heck of a ride by Tyler Gaffleone. Yeah. Looked like a gambling girl was going to go right by her, and Tyler kept her going with a strong left hand, and tell you what, that Fairgrounds Oaks has been really producing a lot of Kentucky Oaks runners of late.
Derby? I know last week we talked, you said you were headed to a Derby party. Anybody get lucky with Mage?
You know, we made a couple dollars, nothing spectacular. Unfortunately, I had been on Mage and the Fountain of Youth and the Florida Derby, and gosh, Seth, I've just been burned over the years betting N2Ls in the Derby, like Hofburg, N3L like Soup and Sandwich, and I had my two NLs yesterday, Disarm and Mage, and kind of jumped off both of them and was going to make a good score if Angel of Empire could have won. That could have got us near 10 G's with the pick five and everything, but made a couple little saver bets with Mage, but it just kind of heartbreaking. I jumped off him a little too early. I thought his inexperience would catch up to him in that big race, and second-guessing myself there, Seth. I preach it at Finger Lakes all the time. You know, when you pick a horse throughout the course of a season, if you stick with horses, you have a tendency to get rewarded, and I just jumped off him a little bit too early. Heck of a pick five, near 18,000 if we could have got smart enough to him.
Yeah, that we've all been there. But, and I'm with you. I liked Angel of Empire and Mage. I just couldn't pull the trigger with only the three starts under the belt. But he ran great yesterday. And I thought Angel of Empire ran well. Two fills, having attended the pace. I thought all of the top three runners ran very well. So
I got real excited, Seth, up the backstretch when I saw the 22 and the 45 and Angel of Empire back there. And, you know, had to go back and watch the replay a couple of times because I wasn't really sure where Mage came from. He was right there with Angel of Empire. Yeah. You know, Mage got a little better split in between the 5/16 and the 3/16 right there. And Angel of Empire had to tip outside off after him. But if he was good enough, he would have run him down. It was heartbreaking. But congratulations to Mage. I'm really happy for him and a cool horse. And, you know, I learned a lesson. You know, the last 2 years, an N2L has won the Kentucky Derby. And inexperienced, dosage figures, whatever. I don't think anything applies anymore like it used to traditionally, say, 10, 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah, and that's a great point for folks who maybe are newer to the game and are listening to people like you and me who are talking sometimes about the trends, historical trends and whatnot. And it's good information for us, too, to kind of realize the Derby now as compared to 20 years ago is just a different puzzle. And I think you do have to look at it differently. The horses are more lightly raced. And, you know, I said earlier Mage was only the third horse coming in with only three wins, Justify and Big Brown. So that's two out of the last few that have done it being that lightly raced. And it's just, you know, again, 20, 30 years ago, that would have been kind of an impossible task. But it is a new Kentucky Derby. But again, we tuck those things into our back pocket for handicapping in the future. And speaking of handicapping in the future, let's get some thoughts tomorrow up at the Finger Lakes. And we're going to take a look at a couple of races for tomorrow. Seventh race on Monday afternoon. An allowance non-winners of two lifetime. Five furlongs the trip. What do you see tomorrow in race seven?
All right, we're going to get to race seven. I just wanted to give a big shout-out to my friends, Noel and David DeSiva. Noel runs Winback Farms. And unbelievable, Seth. Yesterday, as soon as we got here, myself and my girlfriend Jen, as soon as we got here to the farm, we were alerted there were a couple of mares that were ready to foal. And one of them did right in during the Derby. And Make It Snappy had her first foal, and it was right during the Derby. So here's a future Pacer winner here in New York, and Make It Snappy colt, a good looking little guy, and pretty cool to go see him. I didn't get to see him delivered, but we were down there about 5 minutes after the Derby, so that was
nice.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah, very good. And you would think there would have to be some kind of natural name, Derby Day or some name that just fits right in with that.
Yeah, exactly. So that was pretty cool.
That's great.
I've never seen a foal, whether a standard bred or a thoroughbred, born that quickly, you know, or you know what I mean, coming to life and being down there like 5-10 minutes after he came out. It was pretty awesome.
Ah, that's great. Very good. All right.
All right, let's get to tomorrow. So the seventh race, I'm going to start that. I've got a couple tomorrow, the late double. our 5 furlong seventh race is our Monday feature. Nice little race for fillies and mares, non-winners of two. I think there's a little bit of pace in here. I think the rail will go JD advantage. Lockbox just mixed it up in a 4.5 furlong race with a filly that we should all remember her name. Her name is 'Cause You're Pretty. So, I mean, Lockbox really has some credentials. She has foundation, speed, a race over the race over the track against a good one. You add Road to Royalty in there on the comeback, who I think has a lot of ability. Maybe Summer Nitro, Forever Amy. What I'm getting to is it looks like we could get some ample pace. And I'm going to land on the 4. Wait, Don't Tell Me. I thought she was rounding into one of our better 2-year-old fillies at the conclusion of her 2-year-old campaign. It took her a couple of starts to get it into gear. She ran a big maiden special weight victory over a good sealed good racetrack. And then came back and ran a very good second in a She's a Stone Cold Fox. And I know it's basically an upper elevated allowance event, but I like the fact she was able to turn the tables on Warsaichi, who had defeated her and went on to win our Lady Finger. I thought this was a filly that was getting better with a little bit of age. She had 3 races at Tampa, and nothing really that good. You know, a long race over the turf that she backpedaled. A mile and a 40 on the dirt, she backpedaled. An even race for 16. But I like the fact she has those 3 races, and then she has a couple of nice drills coming in, and perhaps with a little bit of pace to chase. And you know me, always looking for a little bit of a price at 6-1. She'll be my top pick. But the race is very contentious. The 2 figures, I think the 5 is a talented filly. There are other fillies in here, but the 4 will be my top pick.
Yeah, sure to get overlooked a little bit odds-wise with the races down at Tampa, but also notable, comes in with a couple of nice workouts since arriving back up in New York. I think she's kind of interesting as well at a 6-1 morning line price. All right, let's turn the page. Race number 8, bottom level B-condition claimers going a quick 5 furlongs. Your thoughts on race number 8?
I was really, really impressed with David Jacobson, filly Ice Cold Gold, a Kentucky bred. I really liked her victory on the 25th of April. I had supported her that day, touted her, and I thought 2-1 was somewhat very generous. She didn't have an ideal trip. She had to overcome a 4.5 furlong distance, which was probably a little too short for her. She had some decent fillies that she was running down that are pretty decent, and they're in the card tomorrow. If not tomorrow, it's Tuesday, I'm not sure, but talking about Flattery's Music, Lady Yellen, Roz, not a bad little group right there. She had all sorts of trouble near the quarter pole, a very patient ride by Andre. He finally went over to the rail. She won going away. Her gallop out was super impressive. I think she'll get ample pace to chase with Fast Fran on the comeback. Don't Eat the Apple likes to go, even though she's been breaking a little slowly of late. Trivia is no slouch when it comes to being somewhat forwardly positioned. Wintered, a siren. There's a little bit of speed in here. And I'll tell you what, if this filly runs the way she did and she has that race under her belt, I like this gal. I think she's pretty legit, and 4-1 seems awfully generous to me. I really liked her gallop out, and just think she's the one to beat here in the nightcap. Ice Cold Gold.
Yeah, 4-1 does seem generous, and the 2-1 on the move up from the Naira Circuit last time seemed like a generous price, but that one would get locked in with that. So, all right, a couple of ideas for the Monday card up at the Finger Lakes. As always, Tony, appreciate the thoughts on the Finger Lakes and beyond, and we'll talk again next week.
You got it, my friend. Thank you, Seth.
Appreciate it. Tony Kahlo from the Finger Lakes. Again, nice racing up Rochester Way Monday and Tuesday this week, so check that out over the next couple of days. All right, I'm going to wrap things up. Before I do wrap things up, though, I do want to tip my cap and much applause to the Brooklyn Cowboy, Kevin Cox. He had our bankroll, our Derby Day bankroll yesterday, playing on behalf of, I think there was 50 people on the team. There was a group of the leading account holders for the month of April. There was some folks selected from new accounts during the month. And then there was an online, I think 25 people selected randomly from online entries, I believe. Everybody wound up very happy over, I didn't hear the final total. It might have been more, it was definitely over 8,000. It might have been over 9, and probably was, as I'm thinking, with the hits. So everybody wound up with a couple of $100 or the better part of a couple of $100 on the team. But most notable, during the day, Kevin had bets in multiple races and was hitting here or there exactas or win bets that were very nice. Race number seven, he had a number of bets in the race, but one of them was with Nobles, and then singled Nobles in the first leg of a pick three and then went all off. So Nobles, as the longest price in race seven, comes back at $78 to start that pick three with an all-all. And then it's just root for some crazy stuff. And sure enough, General Jim, $12, a little at value. But then Web Slinger wins the last leg at $47. The 50-cent pick three, $7,700. And with the scratch of Talking a Nation, there was a $230 consolation there. So the pick three, $8,000 right there, and as I say, hit some nice bets. So we were at the 9 or 10. I didn't see the final total. I was just mind boggled by the pick three that the Brooklyn Cowboy hit, Kevin Cox. So again, hats off to both Kevin and everybody who made the bankroll team. Congratulations to everybody. It was a fun, lucrative afternoon. So now y'all have a little extra dough, courtesy of Capital OTB. And again, keep your eyes on the various promotions as they come up, because there are plenty of opportunities throughout the year for a little bit of free money to enjoy via the promotions and events. All right, I'm going to wrap it up for this edition of Racing Across America, the day after, the Derby postscript edition of Racing Across America. But we'll be back in about an hour and a half or so with OTB Live for a Sunday afternoon. I'm going to look at a little aqueduct. I also have some thoughts on Woodbine this afternoon. We'll probably pull in some Saratoga harness as well. So plenty of action to enjoy on a Sunday afternoon. Stay tuned for all that coming up in a little bit. Otherwise, been a fun morning. As always, I do appreciate your tuning in. Hopefully you enjoyed the show. Got a little info, again, to tuck in the back pocket perhaps for the future, but also just some nice recap of the action yesterday with our man Steve Bick, who was live from Churchill for the past couple of weeks. So that was fun also. Otherwise, as I say, going to wrap it up for a Sunday morning, but again, we invite you to tune back in about an hour and a half or so for OTB Live for a Sunday afternoon. So we'll see you then. We would like to thank Woodbine for their sponsorship of this program and some of the other programming and events here at Capital OTB. Woodbine's 2023 Thoroughbred Stakes program has more than $17 million in purses, including 39 graded stakes, 5 grade 1 events, and 2 $1 million classics, the King's Plate and the Woodbine Mile. Woodbine, now through December, great racing north of the border.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.